Yashodanandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jayarada Madhava Kunja Vihari Jai Om Vishnu Pada Paramahamsa Parivara Ajkacharya Ashtotra Satesi Srimad Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Om Vishnu Pada Paramahamsa Parivara Ajkacharya Ashtotra Satesi Astotra Shata Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Anantakoti Vaishnavurindu Ki Namacharya Haridas Thakur Ki Prem Se Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasvati Gaur Bhaktavurindu Ki Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gop Gopinada Shamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Vrindavan Mathura Dham Ki Navadip Mayapur Dham Ki Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Ganga Mai Yamuna Mai Ki Bhakti Devi Tulsi Maharani Ki Samaveta Bhakta Vrandaki, Gaur Premanande, all glories to the simple devotees, all glories to the simple devotees, all glories to the simple devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga Jagadguru Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudirayet Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Okay, so today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto number 3, Chapter 22, Verse number 24. Pratam Duhitaram Samrat Sadrakshaya Gata Vyataha Upaguhya cha bahubhyam. Aukantya unmita ashayaha pratam duhitaram samrat pratam duhitaram samrat Sadrakshayagatavyataha Upaguhyacha Bahubhyam Upaguhyacha Bahubhyam Aukuntya Unmatita Ashrayaha Aukantya Unmatita Ashrayaha Pratam Duhitaram Samrat Sadrakshaya Gatavyataha Upaguhyacha Bahubhyam Aukantya Unmitita Ashrayaha Pratam Duhitaram Samrat Sadrakshaya Gatavyataha Upaguhya cha bahubhyam Aukantya unmitita ishayaha ಉಪಗುಹ್ಯಶ ಬಾಹುಭ್ಯಾಂ ಔಕಂತ್ಯುನ್ಮಿತಿತಾಶಯಃ ಪ್ರತಾಂ ದುಹಿತರಾಂ ಸಮ್ರಾತ್ ಸದೃಕ್ಷಾಯ ಗತಾವ್ಯತಃ ಉಪಗುಹ್ಯ ಚ ಬಾಹುಭ್ಯಾಂ ಔಕಂತೋನ್ಮಿತಿತಾಶಯಃ ಸದೃಕ್ಷಯ ಗತಾವ್ಯತಃ ಪ್ರತಾಂ ದುಹಿತರಾಂ ಸಮ್ರಾತ್ ಸದೃಕ್ಷಯ ಗತಾವ್ಯತಃ ಉಪಾಗುಹ್ಯ ಚ ಬಾಹುಭ್ಯಾಂ ಔಕಂತ್ಯುನ್ಮಿತಿತಾಶಯಃ ಪ್ರತಾಂ ದುಹಿತರಾಂ ಸಮ್ರಾತ್ ಸದೃಕ್ಷಯ ಗತಾವ್ಯತಃ ಉಪಾಗುಹ್ಯ ಚ ಬಾಹುಭ್ಯಾಂ ಔಕಂತ್ಯುನ್ಮಿತಿತಾಶಯಃ ಮಾತಾಜಿ ಪ್ರತಾಂ ದುಹಿತರಾಂ ಸಮ್ರಾತ್ ಪ್ರತಾಂ ಹೂ ಹ್ಯಾಸ್ ಗಿವೆನ್ ಹೂ ವಾಸ್ ಗಿವೆನ್ ದುಹಿತರಾಂ ಡಾಟರ್ ಸಮ್ರಾಟ್ ದಿ ಎಂಪರರ್ ಮನು ಸದೃಕ್ಷಯ ಆನ್ ಟು ಎ ಸೂಟಬಲ್ ಪರ್ಸನ್ ಗತಾವ್ಯತಃ ರಿಲೀವ್ಡ್ ಆಫ್ ಹಿಸ್ ರೆಸ್ಪಾನ್ಸಿಬಿಲಿಟಿ ಉಪಾಗುಹ್ಯ ಎಂಬ್ರೇಸಿಂಗ್ ಚ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಬಾಹುಭ್ಯಾಂ ವಿತ್ ಇಸ್ ಟೂ ಆರ್ಮ್ಸ್ ಔಕಂತ್ಯ ಉನ್ಮಿತಿತಾಶಯ having an anxious and agitated mind purport by his divine grace AC Bhaktivinoda Swami Srila Prabhupada thus relieved of his responsibility by handing over his daughter to a suitable man Swayambhuva Manu his mind agitated by feelings of separation embraced his affectionate daughter with both his arms maybe you can repeat together thus relieved of his responsibility by handing over his daughter to a suitable man Swayambhuva Manu his mind agitated by feelings of separation embraced his affectionate daughter with both his arms Harpat a father always remains in anxiety until he can hand over his grown up daughter to a suitable boy a father and mother's responsibility for children continues until they marry them to suitable spouses when the father is able to perform that duty he is relieved of his responsibility this is just a short purport om agnyanati mirandasya agnyanam janashalakya chakshurun unitam ena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam sthapitam ena bhutale svayam rupakadamayam tadati svapadantikam vandeham shri gurum shri utapadakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana rugnatanvitam tam sajivam sadvaitam savadutam parijana sahitam krishna chaitanya devam shri radha krishna sa ಪಾದಾನ್ ಸಹಗನಲಿ ಶ್ರೀಲಲಿತಾ ಕವಿಶಾಖಾನ್ವಿತಾಂಶ್ಚ ಹೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಕರುಣಾ ಸಿಂಧು ದೀನಬಂಧು ಜಗತ್ಪತೆ ಗೋಪೇಶ ಗೋಪಿಕಾ ಕಾಂತ ರಾಧಾಕಾಂತ ನಮೋಸ್ತುತೆ ತಪ್ತ ಕಾಂಚನ ಗೌರಾಂಗಿ ರಾಧೇ ವೃಂದಾವನೇಶ್ವರಿ ವೃಷಭಾನುಸುತೆ ದೇವಿ ಪ್ರಣಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಪ್ರಿಯೇ ವಾಂಚಾಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾ ಸಿಂಧುಭ್ಯ ಏವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸ ಅತಿ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So welcome everyone for today's Srimad Bhagavatam class. So today we are at a point where Devahuti is married to Kardama Muni, and after handing over his daughter to Kardama Muni, now the father Swayambhu Manu is going back to his kingdom, and these are the verses which can explains the feelings and emotions which is being undergone by Swayambhu Manu. So in this purport, if you see, you see this word responsibility, the father and mother's responsibility, and the father is relieved of his responsibility. So the theme here is about the responsibility. That's the main theme of this purport. How Swayambhu Manu has fulfilled his responsibility as a father after giving his daughter, you know, marrying his daughter to a suitable person. So basically, not only Swayambhu Manu, but if you see all the other personalities in Srimad Bhagavatam, they have this sense of responsibility in them, right? I mean, whatever actions they perform, they are always guided by a sense of responsibility. And that is what sometimes we can call it as dharma, right? Something which is guiding, like a responsibility, that someone has to fulfill it, regardless of what one, you know, one's opinions are. So, in the similar way, here, Swayambhu Manu, he is fulfilling his responsibility here after, you know, marrying his daughter. And this responsibility is a primary, what do you call, a value system. You can call it as a value system which is governing the decisions which is made by Swayambhu Manu. So, this value system is something which basically guides everybody's actions, decisions, and the desires, right, how they plan their life. Right, it's all being governed by a value system a person is having. Of course, some people may be aware of their value system, some people may not be aware of it. But regardless, everybody is basically acting on this value system. So now today, what I want to do is that I want to kind of little bit explore more on how this value system is relevant, especially in the life of a devotee and also for the ISKCON as a preaching movement. Okay, so this is a study. I mean, whatever I'm presenting here, it's actually a part of the training I have undergone with the ISKCON Congregation Development Ministry. I just thought some of this is relevant, so I just, you know, presenting few topics here. So this is a study done by John Hopkins University, and this research was published in the year 2022. It talks about the changing generational values, how people of different generations are, you know, their value system is changing every time. And this value system is something which kind of governs everybody's, you know, decisions and, and, you know, the desires, right? So, again, this is just their own way of classifying. I'm not going to go into the detail. Just you can, you know, look from the screen and try to understand. So, essentially, what they're trying to say here is that depending upon the year in which you are born, you are bound to have a specific type of a value system. Right? And suppose, let's say, if people were born from 1946 to 1964, they have a type of value system. Compared to people who are born from 1965 to 1980, they have a different set of value system. And all these value systems are being governed by the socio-economical, political situations where they are brought up in. Right? So that's how a different people kind of develops a different value systems. And these are the ones which are governing, you know, their life and their decisions. For example, people who are born in this, you know, 1946 to 64, you know, they are of a more of a value system of working hard. Like they really want to work hard, and they get another opportunity, they want to even more harder, right? And the one after that, 1965 to 1980, they want to work hard, but they also want to enjoy. As much as they work hard, that much they want to enjoy. They want to make sure that they get both. And people from 1981 to 96, they also want to work hard, enjoy, but at the same time, they are smart. They only want to work in a place where they can succeed, right? And these people from 1997 to 2010, they don't really care about working hard or anything. They only want to do something what they really believe in. You see, they don't really, you know, into working smart or working hard, nothing like that. So it's like that. So essentially what I want to say is that, you know, this is how the value system kind of determines how a person makes the decisions. And if you look at the older generation, and if you see what are one of some of the core values they are being governed, is like, you know, you see the words like responsibility, sacrifice, honor, dignity, and, you know, raising a family, right? So these are the things like a value system, which an older generation maybe you may be seeing all these value systems. But in a but if you use the same words to younger generation, that will put them off. They are no longer, it doesn't really excite them. What really excites them is the value systems like love, freedom, diversity, inclusion, right? And, you know, being not being judgmental. So these are the kinds which really excites them. The minute you say responsibility, it's just like, oh God, it's not for me. It's not really for me. So in this way, we can understand how a human psychology is being governed and dictated by in the socio-economical situation one is brought in. So now why do we need to worry about all these things? As a devotee, why do we need to even, you know, worry about all these things? So the thing is that we, as in ISKCON, we are a preaching movement. We are a preaching movement, and our success lies in how effectively we are able to connect or reach out to the audience we are targeting it to, right? So that means that we should be able to decipher the value systems and apply the, you know, or preach the Krishna conscious philosophy accordingly. Similar, if you see Prabhupada also, when he first came to New York, you know, for the first few days he was observing. He was observing the Western civilization, like how they think, you know, what are the value systems they are governed by, you know, what is their lifestyle. He was observing. Once you observe and then once you decipher this value system, then you apply these preaching principles, then you're going to be a successful preacher. Because the philosophy can be same. But the same philosophy, you can present it in a different way, in a different, with a different value systems. Correct? The same thing. That is accepted. There is nothing wrong with that. Because if you see the Vedic literature, there are two things. One is you have Shruti and you have Smruti. Shruti basically means those are unchanging principles. Doesn't matter on time, place, circumstances. They are unchanging principles. And the Smruti is something, you know, which is contextual. Basically, it is applied to a specific period of time, like Manusmruti. Right? You know, what rules are there for Satya Yuga? They are like different rules for Treta Yuga, and there are different rules for Kali Yuga. What rules are, you know, kind of relevant in Kali Yuga? I mean, Satya Yuga, you don't do the same thing in, you know, Kali Yuga. So they are kind of contextual in nature. So the Vedic civilization itself has recognized this. That's why you have Shruti and Smriti. So in this way, a successful preacher is someone who is expert in applying these principles of Shruti and Smriti and Shruti according to the time, place and circumstances. Otherwise, what happens is that, you know, generally, you know, we may be preaching something in a specific way, but that may not be really interesting to the people. And especially people of the older generation who value the principles of the systems like, you know, rules and regulations and responsibilities. And when they present it to the younger generation, and when they are not connected to that, then the immediate conclusion would be, oh, these people are lazy. You know, you're not responsible. You know, if you're not responsible, that means that you're just lazy, right? No, actually, it is not lazy. What it really means is that they just have a different set of value systems which they are being governed by. Nothing more than that. I mean, you are being governed by a value systems of responsibility, but a younger generation is just being governed by a value systems which is different from that. And your success of in being a preacher is lies in, you know, tapping into that value systems of the younger generation. So basically in the Kali Yuga we can see this change is happening actually very drastically, very fast. Like you can see here, like just in a span of like 20-30 years, like how people are changing, like their value systems are changing so fast, right? That's what, like, you know, when something has to go high, it goes low, but when something has to fall down, it falls very fast, right? Like the health, when you're healthy, you stay healthy, but once you get old, when your health drops, it drops like really fast, right? Right? You can see it like every year. Like stock market, you know, when it goes high, it goes low, but when it crashes like really bad. So in this way, we can see in the Kali Yuga, these value systems and these changes are very abrupt or very fast. And we have to keep up with this, you know, as a preaching movement, we have to keep up with these values and try to, you know, be able to tap into this system. So similarly, like, you know, just for a, you know, for the interaction purpose, let's say, for example, let's say someone asks a question, why should I get married and why should I have children? Right? This is a simple question. Let's say that you are preaching to a college student. Right? He already has a girlfriend and he's already in a relationship. And let's say you want to, and he, now he became a devotee, and you want to convince him that, hey, you want to get married and you need to have children. So how would you answer this? How would you say? How would you convince a person? Can you, anyone give a try? Happier in the long run. Yeah, see. You don't say that you are your responsibility, right? I mean, the way the Vedic, you know, principle teaches, it uses the principle of responsibility. But if you use the same principle of responsibility, they are not going to connect to that. Because they don't identify with that value system. So this is just a small example. And further diving into this, there is a professor called Professor Rodney Stark. He's from the University of Washington, and he's from the Department of Religious Studies. And he has published a book called Why Religious Movement Fail. I mean, he has been studying many religious movements, and he was trying to understand why a specific religious movement succeed and why some religious movements fail. And he gives 10 reasons. I'm not going to go into all the 10. I'm just going to discuss like a couple of reasons. The first thing, the most important thing one he says is that the religious movements are likely to succeed to the extent that they retain their cultural continuity with conventional faith of the societies in which they seek converts. So what it is trying to say here is that it is easier for the people to join a movement where they can identify themselves in a culturally and emotionally and psychologically. Let's say you present something which is alien, which they cannot connect to, then it is very, very less likely that someone is going to join that religious movement. The more common things, the more overlap you see with any movement, the more likely it is, the more easy it is for the people to join that movement. And the more, what do you call, differences are there, the more less likely that they're going to join that movement. So that is why, I mean, even if you see some preachers, when they go to a different country or a different part of the world to preach, the first thing they'll try to do is that what are some of the common things which we share, right? What are some of the common things which the culture already has, and what are some of the common things we as a Krishna conscious preachers, we have in common. So once we have the common principles, then that easier for people to connect, right? So that is what he's trying to say here. The more easier, the more common things you have, the more easy for them to connect to. So if you see Prabhupada also, there are two requests, one for the Indians, one for the Western disciples. For the Indian disciples, he said, so my request specifically to the Indians, that do not neglect your culture, the Vedic culture. Vedic culture means Krishna consciousness. So this is a lecture given by Prabhupada in the Pandal in Bombay in 1973. So this is where he's trying to tell that, no, this thing, this Krishna conscious culture is non-different from the Vedic culture. It's the same thing. Don't think that this is something which is different, right? So he's trying to establish a similarity. And when he's trying to preach to the Westerners, Western disciples, this is a letter to Hayagriva in 31st July 1967. He says, I think you should continue some information from the Bible that Sankirtan, chanting of the holy names of God, is recommended there also. There is a book called Agrarian Gospel in which it is stated that Lord Jesus Christ lived in the temple of Jagannath. So as far as possible, you should prepare yourself for future writings that our movement is not against the philosophy of Jesus Christ, but it is in complete collaboration with his line of religiosity. You see, I mean, you try to understand, you know, what Prabhupada's thinking process here is, that he's just trying to find the similarities and the common things to share. So then it becomes easier, and that movement is going to be more successful. And this is the next principle. The religious movements must socialize the young sufficiently well as to minimize both defection and the appeal of reduced strictness. So what it's trying to say is that if you really want to succeed, the first thing you need to do is that you need to socialize your younger generation. Because once you have the younger generation identify with your group's teachings, or when they adopt the same lifestyle as which is being recommended, and not only identify but also last, they practice their entire life, right? So that's the next generation. Then that means that you are more likely to be succeeding in that aspect. So this is a, one of the observations from the Pew's Research Center of the Religion and Public Life. This chart gives you a study on different religious groups where it shows what is the religious retention rate. Retention rate basically means that let's say a child is born in a Hindu family or a specific religious family, right? When the child grows up, is the child still identifying with the same religious group or is he trying to change his identity? That's what it is trying to say here. And the different religious groups are ranked accordingly here. And the highest, you know, is given actually to the Hindu religion. You can see it got 84%. What it means is that, let's say there are 100 children in the Hindu religious background, born in a Hindu family. Out of that 84 of the people, 84 children, when they grow up, they're still going to be identifying themselves as Hindus. That's what it basically means. And the lowest ranking goes to, you know, I don't know what they are, but Jehovah Witness. Jehovah Witness, they only got like 37%. I mean, that is where the children doesn't really identify or continue with their family religious inclinations. That is what it is trying to say. So the religious movements must socialize the young sufficiently to minimize both defection and the appeal of reduced strictness. And if you see some of the Prabhupada's directions also, he has emphasized a lot on the Varnashrama principles, and this is some of the references from a morning walk. Now you should be trained up and revise the whole edition of Western civilization, especially in America. Then a new chapter will come in. This is a program. Therefore, Varnashrama school is required. So this is specifically addressing the third aspect, you know, on socializing or engaging the younger generation in the success of any religious movement. And he further says, if a child is trained properly in Krishna consciousness, he will never go away. This is a letter to Bhanu Tanya Dasi. And this is just one more interesting thing what I thought it is useful. That these are some of the issues compiled by California State of Education and the Police Department. So they're trying to identify what are some of the issues the schools are facing in 1940s versus 1990s. In 1940s, some of the disciplinary issues are talking, chewing gum, making noise, running in the halls, getting out of line, wearing improper clothing, not putting paper in the waste bin, waste basket. Okay, this is not even 2020, this is 1990s. The top problems, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, pregnancy, suicide, rape, robbery, and assault. So this is how you can see how in such a short span, how things degrade so fast and how the people's value systems keeps changing so fast. Anyway, so, one may have a question that why are we discussing all these things, especially in the Bhagavatam class? Because Bhagavatam especially, these are like social issues, right? Like this has nothing to do with the philosophy. These are just some social and moral issues. And especially Bhagavatam is, because Vedic literature, there are two types. One, you have the literature which is in Pravritti Marga and Nivritti Marga. Nivritti Marga basically deals with liberation and, into inquiry into Brahman and Paramatma and Bhagavan, all those things. And Pravritti all deals with the social life, moral codes and all those things. So is Bhagavatam a Pravritti literature or Nivritti literature? Which category it falls into? It's a Nivritti literature. I'm asking, is Bhagavatam a Pravritti literature or a Nivritti literature? It's a Nivritti literature, right? And why is Bhagavatam talking about all these social issues, Varnashrama issues and all these things? Because if you look at the other Nivritti literature, like Upanishads, right? Upanishads never talk about social issues, right? You never see any Upanishad talking about any social or moral issues. They just directly jump into the core subject, which is, inquiring to Brahman or inquiring to Bhagavan and his opulence and all those things. But Bhagavatam, you see all these things discussed. And especially in the first canto itself, there is a verse which says, Dharma Projita Kaitavotra Parmo Nirmatsaranam Satam, means completely rejecting all the religious activities which are materially motivated. Right, even including Dharma, Ardha and Kama, Moksha, right? But most of these things actually is related to Dharma, Ardha and Kama. It's not really related to the Moksha yet, right? All these moral and social issues. Why is it that? Can anyone give any reason? Why is Bhagavatam talking about all these issues? Yeah. Anyone? Yes, go
ahead. The Srimad Bhagavatam, when Narada Muni came to a so-called, you know, chastise Vyasadeva, he says, what are you writing this Mahabharata, you know, with all these things? It's like encourage them to just be more into sense gratification. And then at that point he meditated, he started describing the glories of the Lord. While he did that, Vyasadeva, actually in the Srimad Bhagavatam itself, the second canto, the Bhagavatam, is describing about the creation.
Yeah.
Creation, and then within the creation, if we analyze, we see all the different levels of consciousness of people. So my understanding is that the mood of compassion is there, that it will lead them up to certain stage to actually be in Nivritti Marga.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Prabhu. Yes.
You want to take
Yeah,
Bhagavatam's like a doctor. You know, when you go to see a doctor, he diagnoses you, tells you, this is what you got. You know, you're sick, you're like this. And then he prescribes treatment. So that's what the Bhagavatam's doing. Bhagavatam's telling people, Dharma, Projita, Kaita, Vatra. You know, we're kicking out all the materially motivated religions. That's out of the question. Now we're going to treat you. Now we're going to take you from where you're at, and we're going to take you to the highest level. We're going to take you to pure devotional service. So Bhagavatam is relating to his clientele, so to speak.
Yes, exactly. Bhagavatam is a little bit unique because if you take any shastra, any shastra basically teaches in three ways. There are three ways a shastra teaches. You know, it says, Vedha Puranam Kavyam Cha Purabur Mitram Priyevacha Bodhayantahi Prabhu Trivad Bhagavatam Punaha. Basically, any shastra, they adopt three strategies, three preaching styles, you can say. One is like a king. How the king speaks, like an order, right? Like if you see Upanishads, that's how they speak, you know. Satyam Vada, Dharmam Chara, right? It's like an order. You don't argue, you just follow, right? That's a Vedic style of, you know, conveying the message. All the Upanishads and Vedas conveys like, it's like a king's order, right? And the other way of conveying the message is like a friend, right? Friend, what does a friend do? I mean, friend will not, you know, he'll try to explain and he'll give an example, but the example basically is meant to you, but because you, not to hurt your ego, he'll give some other example and talk about him, but that is essentially meant for us, but he won't talk to us directly. It's like a friend, it's a friendly way of, you know, conveying the message. And the other is like a lover. It's called poetry or Kanta Samhita. Kanta means a wife or a lover, right? So all the itihasas are in this category. This is how they convey the message. The same message. I mean, either the Vedas, Upanishads, Puranas, the message is same, but the way they convey the message is something different. Now, how is Bhagavatam conveying the message? Which strategy is Bhagavatam using? Actually, Bhagavatam using all these three. That's what this verse is telling. But Srimad Bhagavatam instructs like all three of them. Bhagavatam instructs like a king, it instructs like a friend, it also instructs like a lover. There are all the three things. That is a very unique quality of Bhagavatam, how it presents the, you know, the conclusions of the Vedanta Sutras. You know, Bhagavatam is nothing but a commentary on the Vedanta Sutras in one way, right? It's a core philosophical treatise, but how it presents, that is actually a brilliance of Vedavyasa, how he composed, that how he was able to render this message to all class of people, including, you know, the people who are of lower intelligence, right? So that is why you see Bhagavatam discussing about all these things, but essentially it's a Nivritti literature, it is not a Pravritti literature, even though. Right? So anyway, so this is all I want to talk about, just today's verse, like, you know, how we see in this Bhagavatam, we see this, you know, personalities, how they act in the with the value system of, you know, responsibilities. But however, these value systems can keep changing, and people may not be really identifying with the same value systems. And we, as a preacher, for us to be successful, lies in deciphering that value systems and, you know, preaching the message accordingly, depending on the time, place, and circumstances. And I also like to just say a few words about Srivas Pandit, Srivas Thakur, because today is his holy appearance day. As you all know, Srivas Pandit, he is one of the five Panchatattva, right? Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Srivasati Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Srivas means the... Yeah, sorry, I just kind of forgot. My mind is somewhere else. Anyway, so... Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhara, Srivasati Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Okay, so Srivas Pandit, you know, he was actually an, you know, he was an Narada Muni. And he was part of this Chaitanya Leela. And his house called Srivas Angan, it's just few kilometers on the north of the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya in the Navadvip, where Lord Chaitanya used to perform every night Sankirtan in his house, which only some selected and confidential devotees are allowed to partake in that pastime. And Srivas Pandit used to make the selection. He is the authority. He is the one who selects who can go inside and who cannot go inside. And the only criteria which he used to use to select who is qualified is basically someone who is very sincere and someone who is not offensive to the other devotees. So that is a simple qualification which Srivas Pandit used to use for who can see the Lord's or who can be a part of the Lord's pastimes. And it is said that the Srivas Angan, it's a huge place, and it was described that it is having a huge walls and a tall tree surrounding it, and Lord Chaitanya used to perform this dance, this Harit Sankirtan, every night in his house. And there are some pastimes, but does anyone have any questions before? Because I want to leave some time for the question answers as well, because I don't want to go beyond 8:30. Yeah. Shamanari Prabhu, can you just pass on the mic?
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Very fascinating point that you're bringing up. So my question is that the value system of Krishna consciousness is diametrically opposite from the modern value systems of any generation. Mm-hmm. The baby boomer generation, generation X, Y, and Z, the value system is diametrically opposite, because in Kali Yuga, it's practically people's values are on the basis of their mind.
Yeah.
And the mind is, its definitions of values are constantly changing. So where do we draw the line with relating with people's value systems, but also simultaneously being very clear about our own value systems? Because if in the sake of becoming relevant to the society, we lose our own cultural integrity,
yes,
Krishna consciousness can just become an apasadanta or an apasampradaya. And that's happened in the past.
Exactly, yes. So that's what, you know, the best thing would be, you know, just to study the life of Prabhupada himself. Like how he was thinking, you know, if you read Prabhupada Leelamrita, that what is the thought process Prabhupada is having? Because this is no different from what it was 50 years ago. So, like, you know, there are many examples. One letter I was reading where he says that when Prabhupada, he wanted to go send the preachers to the Middle East. He wanted to send the preachers to the Middle East. And there he was telling that if there are any churches or mosques, we can buy them to make our temple. And he was telling that even after purchasing that mosque or a church, we can still have Jesus Christ on the altar. You see? We can still worship Jesus Christ along with Gaur Nithai. I mean, this is a revolutionary thing. Like, you see, basically, you know, we have to have some kind of a balance where we do not, you know, that is one of the principles, you know, which is mentioned in by Professor Rodney Stark. There are 10 principles. I did not get time to discuss all 10. The second or third principles is that not being too strict and not being too, you know, not strict. It's maintaining a healthy tension. That is a key. Basically, it's all about balance. Basically, you know, not being too strict, I mean to say, not like enforcing our, you know, our value system strongly. At the same time, you know, not compromising our value systems too much also. It's a healthy balance what we need to maintain. That is a secret, I would say. Yeah. Archita Prabhu. Can you pass on the mic to Archita Prabhu?
Thank you for presenting this topic. As always, I will ask you to put your notes along with the lecture on the YouTube channel, so those who are not here or even here and can't see clearly can go back and check them. On this last point that Devarata Prabhu raised, very, very important point, the recommendation is the same, and you'll see if you study properly, like you said, the approach is the same. First of all, here. Sometimes we're too eager to speak. First of all, here what the person is saying, and then you'll know where they're coming from. And then, as Prabodhananda Saraswati said, flattery. Flattery. We're not lying, but if you flatter somebody, you know, like Brigapati likes to focus on your hat. Hey, that's a very nice hat. Where'd you get it from? You know, like that. Something just to make them feel relaxed, feel like that you're interested in them. And then, as Prabhupada Saraswati says, eventually you get to the point where you tell him, just forget everything that you think you know and listen to this. Take the mercy of Lord Chaitanya in the form of the Hare Krishna Mantra, in the form of this philosophy. So the approach is the same, regardless of which generation you're dealing with.
Yeah.
Whether it's 40s or 80s or 2020, it doesn't matter. Same approach. Listen, so you know where they're coming from. And then a little flattery doesn't hurt, so they feel that you're focused on them. And then you try to give them, in the case of our book distributors especially, and all of us should focus on that, get them to take the book. Prabhupada said, what is the use of your 3-minute preaching? Get them to go home with the book. So that's the same approach for everybody, whether it's a college student or a 70-year-old engineer, or it doesn't matter. That's the end goal is the same. Get them to take that book and take it home.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you mentioned at one point in the lecture that Smriti, you were talking about Smriti and Shruti,
yeah.
And you mentioned that Smriti was contextual,
yes.
Meaning it's time, place, and circumstance. The Smriti for the Satya Yuga is not the same as the Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga. Where does that idea come from? Did you hear that from? Because that solves a lot of problems for me. I mean, I remember coming across things that, you know, about marriage and from the Manu Samhita.
Yeah.
And it's rude. Anyway.
Well, I mean,
I can't remember actually hearing Prabhupada say that. Hopefully you can.
Smriti is always contextual. Smriti changes. It basically, that is why the principles, I mean, it's common, right? Like, you know, even Prabhupada himself, right, says, right, like, there are some practices which are allowed in a different yuga but not allowed in now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, who sets those things?
Or like when Lord Chaitanya met with the Chankazi and he said 5 things aren't allowed in the Kali Yuga, marrying your brother's wife.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a Smriti principle.
Uh-huh.
It comes from
that's Smriti. Okay.
Yeah. So that all comes from there. So we can imply, you know, saying that it is contextual because it changes. It's an application. The principle remains the same, but application remains different.
Mm-hmm.
On that principle that we're discussing here, in terms of different generations, you know, having lived in Krishna consciousness for 50 years, you actually go through a couple of generations. And my experience is that in each one, they're doing whatever they're doing because they want to be happy. They're searching for happiness, some kind of a solution to their suffering condition. And I find that at the bottom line of Krishna consciousness is that we have the remedy to become happy, to become satisfied. So if we stick to the principles of Krishna consciousness, as we were given by Srila Prabhupada, it'll penetrate through any generational personality,
yeah.
Because they're searching for that extreme happiness. Like in the early days, you mentioned that people were chewing gum. I remember that particular time period because I was going to school. And I remember chewing gum. And I remember getting 20 lashes on my hands with a ruler while you're chewing gum in school.
Yeah.
And the big issue was everybody was putting their gum underneath their desk.
Yeah.
And that was a big issue. And
yeah.
it became like a, you go to the parents would go to you know, meet the teacher, and that would be the big issue. So, but out of the whole system, the reason you were doing that is because you just wanted to be happy.
Yeah.
You thought chewing gum was going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
So, happiness is the key element.
Exactly, yes.
And
sure.
In every generation, and Srila Prabhupada gave us the remedy, which is applicable to any generation, regardless of what they think or feel.
Exactly. Thank you. Anyone else? Yeah, just the last.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your really nice presentation. I always really appreciate when you give Srimad Bhagavatam class. You get a really unique perspective on Shastra. You mentioned that the Srimad Bhagavatam teaches in 3 ways, as a master, as a friend, and as a lover, to explain why marriage and these other social principles and problems are mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. But I'd like some more clarification. I wasn't completely clear on how this principle of Srimad Bhagavatam teaching in these 3 different moods results in, is an explanation for marriage and other Varnashram principles being contained in the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Okay, first we need to understand who is the target audience for Srimad Bhagavatam. who is the audience for Srimad Bhagavatam. Because, you know, Vyasadeva has written Puranas for a specific reason. Because before Vyasadeva, already there is Upanishads already existing. But the reason why he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam is for the people of Kali Yuga. That is his target audience, especially people who are of less intelligence, right? If people are of less intelligence, that basically means that they're not fully surrendered yet. So that means that they need a stable platform where there is a social order, and that is Varnashrama principles, right? And there is marriage, children, these are all like Varnashrama principles. Because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharma Paricharya. That means that can you give up Varnashrama principles also? Yeah, you can, but the thing is that it depends on how surrendered you are. But the target audience for Srimad Bhagavatam, they are not in that level yet. So in this way, what it's trying to do is that by simultaneously stressing on the Varnashrama principles, at the same time simultaneously stressing on the surrender to the Krishna, it's basically, you know, what do you call, taking a multidimensional approach to solve one issue, you know, to solve the issue.
My only question is, because you're specifically referencing Dharma Projita Kaitavocha Paramo.
Correct.
And in that verse, it mentions that the target audience of the Srimad Bhagavatam is Nirmatsaranam Satam, those who are truthful, non-envious, like the Paramahamsas. It's
both.
A Paramahamsa Samhita.
Yeah.
So my question is, the Bhagavatam mentioned this target audience is the Paramahamsas. So why is it that it talks about Varnashram Dharma
there is one
for
more
those
verse.
On a lower standard?
No, there is one more verse in Bhagavatam which says that, you know, Sri Shuddha Dvija Bandhu. Basically, this is written for the people of Kali Yuga who are, you know, unfortunately less intelligent on all those things also. So basically, this Bhagavatam is for the highest of the highest and the lowest of the lowest. It covers all the audience, not only Paramahamsas. Because Paramahamsas also can enjoy, but not only Paramahamsas.
When Uddhava was talking with Lord Krishna in the 14th chapter, describing and asking all the different philosophers, well, you know, who's best, why they have different. And then Krishna started describing the whole creation, the different authorities and different levels. And then he said, yeah, everybody will find happiness in, you know, philosophy, in religiousness, in charity, and blah, 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 many different things. So, but ultimately, at the end, he just concluded, you know, that the devotional service is the topmost. Yeah. And that reminds me also when, you know, we heard many times when Yogi Bhajan came to Srila Prabhupada, trying to invite him to go to Hawaii or some place where they have a gathering of different teachers presenting, you know, transcendence. But Prabhupada was not that much interested because his point was, well, are we going to teach Bhagavad Gita? Are we going to speak of Bhagavad Gita? Because if it's not, what is the point? So he was really convinced. And we also have other instances. For example, you know, what is that famous motto that, what is Yatama Tatapath? Yeah, Ramakrishna. You know, you can please a lot of people. You can make your crowds and big followers. But still, so every teacher will always have. So in Krishna consciousness, I've been realizing, this is my own reflection, that we will do our best as the way the Acharyas want, as the way the Bhagavatam presents, the way Prabhupada presents it. But it's not, ultimately, it's not for everyone.
Yeah.
We would like it to be for everyone, but it's not. So everyone will have their own followers like that.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you very much. And Tashimad Bhagavatam Ki Jagat Vishwa Prabhupada.